It's here and now. Yesterday, after convicted kidnapper and rapist Ariel Castro spoke at his sentencing hearing, Judge Michael Russo complimented Michelle Knight, one of Castro's victims, on her remarkable restraint. Well, social media wasn't as polite. It exploded with anger after Castro said things like the sex in the West Cleveland house where he held three women captive for over a decade was consensual, that the women were not virgins when he kidnapped them as girls, that he was abused as a child and was sick. How is it that Ariel Castro was allowed to have the last word, to defame his victims? Well, Doug Berman is a professor of law at Ohio State University in Columbus. And Doug, first, you say every offender has a constitutional right to speak.
Yes, it's called the right to allocution. And the sense is that as a part of due process, and often it's guaranteed by formal criminal statutes, we think it's necessary to allow a criminal defendant, before he's actually going to be sentenced, to have a chance to say something. What's unusual about this case is not only that he, you know, took up that chance, but turned it into something that was a somewhat extreme statement of personal defense, rather than what often happens, which is an expression of remorse or an effort to try to convince the judge that a lesser sentence is appropriate.
You say this is unusual. I'm wondering if there's other prominent cases where you can think of where it's happened, or is this really an outlier?
It's not an outlier in the sense that, particularly in cases where an extreme sentence is already booked into the proceeding, and so there's nothing the defendant can lose by trying to, you know, sort of justify or say something outrageous. And they think and know, to some extent, this is their last chance on a public stage. We see other examples of this. Perhaps one of the most recent notorious ones, also from Ohio, as a matter of fact, involved a 17-year-old school shooter, T.J. Lane, who, among other things, made a perverse physical gesture towards the victims as they were speaking about the harm they suffered from the loved ones he had killed. A huge part of what yesterday's proceedings showcased was how important it was for the prosecutors to document through the first part of the hearing all of the horrible things that Ariel Castro did. Because even though he did get the last word, prosecutors made extra sure that that wasn't the only sentiment that was going to be emerging from the sentencing proceeding.
Well, but it's the thing that shot around the, you know, the Twitter sphere, and it's the part of the trial that many people saw. Is there a certain point where, despite a perpetrator's constitutional right to speak, can the judge stop him?
I certainly think the judges have been recognized to have some authority to control their courtroom. But my sense was, and again, it's a sense that the proceedings reinforced, there was a very justifiable view on the part of prosecutors and the judge not to want to do anything that would give Castro any chance to appeal. What he said, as much as we're troubled terribly by the way he articulated and perhaps further harmed the victims by what he said, to me kind of wonderfully reinforced the wisdom of the way prosecutors handled this case. Their willingness to both think about having the death penalty on the table, even though that would have been a tough sell under the circumstances because of the controversial nature of a pregnancy termination being a capital case, but their willingness to talk about that as a possibility in order to encourage his lawyers and Castro himself to be willing to accept a plea deal, and through a plea deal avoid the spectacle that a full trial would have had. Again, this goes back to these constitutional rights, that Castro himself not only would have been permitted to testify at a full trial to try to defend himself, but given what he said yesterday, the sense I had and took away was that at a full trial, he would have essentially put the victims on trial. Yeah. And that's why, again, I want to compliment the government here and a group of folks in Cleveland who get criticized, sometimes understandably, for lots of other aspects of this, for making sure that even though Castro got a chance to make these horrible statements, that it only ended up being a few minutes in one court proceeding, and now we will, in all likelihood, never hear a peep out of him ever again.
Well, I think we need to compliment the victims as well, because they must have known what might be coming.
I think that's right. I think that's absolutely right, and I think that's where Again, in retrospect, it's not surprising that it was just one victim who chose to be there actually in court. Typically, they'll all want to be there, and the fact that he was the type of person who was going to be saying these sorts of things, that's something that they obviously, you know, knew who he was and how horrible he was. In another sense, I think we get added understanding of how he could have done this and how these types of crimes happen, because you know, he thinks of himself not the same kind of monster that obviously his actions prove him to be. And so for all of the vitriol that might be justified toward him, I think it would be dangerous and inappropriate to say, well, this shows a problem with our current system.
So essentially you're saying that we watched our lauded, admired around the world court system at work.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think, again, that's where you can't let that first cut emotion eclipse the sort of broader perspective. You know, I think in a weird way, his distorted belief that he wasn't so horrible makes me feel not better about what he did, but at least helps me to understand more how somebody could, you know, treat three young women this way for a decade.
The judge actually had the last word, and we should say that. He said, excuses don't take away the harm that's involved. You have extreme narcissism, and it seems rather pervasive, and then proceeded to hand down life plus 1,000 years. That's Doug Berman. He's professor of law at Ohio State University in Columbus, Ohio. Professor Berman, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And, of course, we'd love your thoughts. Does that explanation satisfy you? Let us know at hereandnow.org.